got back from the gym after some health problems, some SEAL colleagues would probably give me some flack for not sticking to it despite the health problems. But it's honestly the sickest I've been. I've been very lucky in life with health, and I was down for the count. I was there late at night, all business, not socializing, like just about everybody in there. Did shoulders, not ab crunches, although like American Psycho, I can do 1,000 now. Used to have a guy in Buds. Actually, it was Bilbo Baggins referenced in a previous episode. He used to do American Psycho impressions every now and then. It was pretty epic. I was there for just 25 minutes. I had my routine down. I was focused. But at that hour and after a good workout, I head back almost on autopilot. Not surprisingly, since it's my gym, I have the route memorized like the back of my hand. Like an elite military navigator, I know every in and out. Know every contingency. Probably like you on the way to work, believe it or not. You're like Ryan Gosling in Drive. You pick up on certain things to get you there faster. And you don't really think about this on routes you don't usually take, where you don't know everything. In its absence, it's obscured. In these circumstances, you see others acting in weird ways on the road. And sometimes it seems like what they're doing doesn't make sense until you get stuck in the turn lane when all the people who take that route on a regular basis are long gone. On my route from the gym, I know about what other people will likely do in every circumstance. I know that in one section, people in the center lane are likely to get stuck by the interstate ramp, which is actually in the right lane, as you might imagine. Lots of cars are going to hang out in that middle lane and get stuck, even though many of them aren't even getting on the interstate either. I have this information. Most people don't. While this information isn't valuable in a monetary sense, it's valuable to me in terms of time and nuisance. Of course, I pay attention to this stuff probably more than most because I think about these things. I'm always looking for efficiency and I concentrate on driving a lot. I've been to racing courses in the SEAL teams and arguably I have better situational awareness than the average person. This is an example of local knowledge championed by Friedrich Hayek. In the publication Econ Lib, author David Henderson refers to Hayek's seminal work as such. Friedrich Hayek's 1945 article in the American Economic Review, The Use of Knowledge in Society, has become a classic. It was the last in a series of articles in which Hayek put the final intellectual nail in the coffin of socialism. Hayek argued persuasively that the information that is most valuable in an economy is decentralized. It exists in little pieces in the minds of the billions of people acting in the economy. It is not centrally aggregated by government planners and can't be centrally aggregated except as a happy result of free markets. These facts, argued Hayek, are a sufficient reason for socialism to fail. Economists who write in the Hayekian tradition often refer to people's information about their own circumstances as local knowledge. Regardless of your political leanings, one must admit that there's a lot of power in this concept of local knowledge. Moreover, this concept can be applied to businesses as well, not just countries, politics, and world economies. But I find that few people will actually make that leap from the academic economic thinking to apply this concept to what happens inside a business. So what is local knowledge exactly? Local knowledge is highly specific. It is unique. It's rare. Only one person has it, or maybe just a few people. Potentially, it's very expensive to get. I would also add one component that I'm sure Hayek would be comfortable with and probably thought about, although I haven't seen this contemplated in the literature. But I would say one particular attribute of local knowledge is that it may be dynamic. So the reality on the ground is ever changing. And perhaps even the schema of that local knowledge is changing, not just the value of a particular variable in the environment. People who have local knowledge also often know the tricks to get the most out of that knowledge. It's sort of a meta local knowledge. Most organizations don't take advantage of this. There could be lots of reasons for this. I think chief among them is some sort of disregard or even disdain for what lower level people, quote, might actually know and be able to do. I think even leaders and companies that value their people highly probably have an implicit and unseen bias against new people. Those could be junior people. Those could be also new people to the company. I have seen several of the best leaders that I've encountered actively solicit information and insights, experiences from people who are very new. And so at least that clue, that tip has spread a little bit in the workplace. Although, again, I think like many biases, whether that be racial biases, gender biases, I think there is this bias that many people don't admit, but which is operationalized in their behavior against younger / junior inexperienced people. As I said, these people are often regarded as lower level, like they're bound for the floor. Bound for the Floor is a song title by Local H. Some people refer to it as that copacetic song. The song might be about depression, but I'm convinced it's a two-part dialogue sung by the same person, vocalist Scott Lucas. On the one hand, he thinks he won't achieve anything and he gets used to it. On the other hand, his alter ego tells him to wake up and that he's pathetic. This is Local H's most notable song. It's one of my favorites from the late 90s. People could rightly complain that the song is repetitive. It's full of power chords. But there's something about the way Scott Lucas sings it in this sort of disinterested surfer tone for the verse. Meanwhile, the chorus has all the energy you would ever want. It's a veritable call to action. There are additional reasons why organizations don't take advantage of local knowledge. One of those is distrust of junior people. Additionally, even if companies want that information from junior people, frankly, some junior people are going to be too scared to express their opinions. There needs to be a mechanism for assessing risks when using this knowledge. That includes how you're using it. So how big is the decision that you're informing? And then you need a way to monitor the inputs to see what input ranges are going to give you risky outcomes. You don't always need this, but if you had an effective system for implementing local knowledge, you would have that. And having such a risk monitoring system would probably make leaders more comfortable with using this local knowledge on a regular basis. There are transaction costs and communication costs to getting this knowledge that are often non-trivial. But at the end of the day, I do believe that people in positions of authority and management, whether they're leaders or not, ultimately senior people in a business are there to make decisions. That is the most valuable thing most often that a leader or a manager in a company can do. Those people get to those positions by building trust with those above them and around them. Experience plays a part, results play a part, but more often than not, it's a trust game. Meanwhile, they have a vested interest in being seen as someone who makes good decisions. That is their province, and that their position is not based solely on this confidence game that they've played so well. Having junior people make decisions at the local level using their local knowledge erodes that. So what you want to ask yourself is, how can I empower these people who have this local knowledge to communicate that knowledge? Or how can I enable that person to make a decision at that local level, utilizing that local knowledge? Finally, how can I codify the tips and tricks they have about acquiring and utilizing that local knowledge that they have? This is this meta local knowledge that I referred to earlier. At the end of the day, these decisions that one will make with this local knowledge are critical to reducing costs and improving revenues, other aspects of the organization's bottom line. These amount to investment decisions. Some of you might be scratching your head, asking yourself, how are these investment decisions? Well, this local knowledge is going to enable the efficient use of resources. Maybe it's maintaining the proper inventory levels in a grocery store. Maybe it's throttling the number of wait staff at a certain hour in the restaurant. These little investment decisions add up to a lot in your bottom line once they add up. Many of these decisions, once you start using local knowledge, will be net new decisions that you're not making now. Tacitly, though, you are. By not making a decision, you are making a decision, even though you have little information because you're not taking advantage of this local knowledge. Let's be clear, though. Investment decisions are informed by a lot. Experience, education, analysis, intuition, but also data. And that data is that local knowledge. Perhaps, though, you might need to help your people turn it into actionable data. For example, there's a case we did at Harvard Business School where there were very experienced people in a custom metalworking shop. The senior people in that organization resisted change to more scientific methods because they regarded the entire process as art. The conclusion, the big takeaway from the case is that many times what people think is art is merely the failure to translate it to a scientific process. Because either you don't have the right resources to apply the scientific method, or you don't have means of measuring the data. But more often than not, it's because there's resistance to turning that artistic endeavor into something scientific because there's more magic in the art, right? You want to feel, if you're that person, that you are the sorcerer's apprentice bringing life into this thing. Now, let's say that you empower your people to make these decisions. What's that going to get you? You might have to train them to do this. Many times the decisions they're making will have some risk, but you need to be able to tolerate that risk and let them fail within reason, as long as they and you are learning from it. The result is, number one, they're going to be better at their job. Number two, they're going to be happier. Number three, they're going to spread these learnings to those around them. And at least two out of those three are probably going to lead to them staying there longer. What's the goal here? The goal is for everyone in your organization to make more and more decisions, faster and faster, better and better, and on more important problems. Local knowledge is not being used nearly enough. As an example, in the U.S. military, young men and women are responsible for protecting the lives of themselves, their comrades in arms, and civilians, as well as millions of dollars in materiel, as we might say in the military. It's funny, no one else uses that word. These military service members have very little training, very little experience, and often very little education about how to resource allocate. There aren't lots of MBAs on the battlefield. I hate to break it to you. But these people know how to communicate. they have confidence in themselves and their leaders have confidence in them. They know how to learn. They know how to take initiative. And often they know how to seek help. They know ways to think. We in the U.S. military put them there because it works. Now, of course, I'm not in the U.S. military anymore, so I shouldn't say we. Those who run militaries do this as much out of belief as out of necessity when there were very poor means of communication on battlefields before the 20th century, and especially in, let's say, the Middle Ages. There was no way for senior commanders to address the minute-to-minute vicissitudes of the battlefield. Now, often you'd see Napoleon with his cape riding on horseback from front to front, shouting commands, spurring on the troops with some esprit de corps. But those were, number one, the exception. By the way, Julius Caesar is said to have done the same thing. Number two, just because they did that from time to time does not mean that there was general control over the actions of what would have been privates, sergeants, more senior enlisted folks, and junior officers. The term field grade officer probably stems from that period where there were poor communications. And those officers and enlisted out there on the front without communication knew that if they made a bad decision, but especially if they did not make any decision at all, given their local knowledge, they and their men were as good as dead. I remember loving that song when it came out. The best lyric in that song is, "If I was Eddie Vedder, would you like me any better?" The song is actually called Eddie Vedder, not As Good As Dead. That being said, the album actually is called As Good As Dead. And it actually, in retrospect, years later, decades later here, looking at the album cover, it's got a young lady smiling on it, holding either a doll or a much younger boy with quarters over his eyes, which is extremely creepy to me as a dad now, given that coins over the eyes were used so that the departed would have money to cross the River Styx. So in case you didn't follow that, it's a young lady holding a dead boy. That shop clerk, that junior accountant, that new designer, they are the expert at something. They have a niche. They have unique experiences. And wherever you place them in the company, whatever work you give them, they will have unique knowledge. And it's your job to find out what that is. That's your job, to let them know that it's their job to make decisions, allocate resources, and lead. They are a part of your team. Speaking of which, Local H has an album called Local H's Awesome Mixtape. There's actually two mixtapes, number one and number two. On one of them, they cover Lorde's Team, one of my favorite Lorde songs. The best part of the song is actually the opening of the song, in my opinion. I might be a hypocrite because I criticized what I characterized as an annoying emo metalcore cover of the Cranberries' Zombie, but there's just something about Local H, which is more alternative, more independent in a way, more surfer cool and less emo metalcore and fan, so sorry, musical taste. I was very tempted at this point in the program to say, your people can be heroes just for one day. Because Local H actually also on their awesome mixtapes have a cover of the song Heroes, which was originally written by and performed by David Bowie. A lot of people probably don't know that because there were a couple versions of this that came out between the 90s and the 2000s. And now it's time to get all the way wet. Footnote number one, there's a music video linked on the Local H site and in the show notes. It's called Patrick Bateman. I referenced Patrick Bateman earlier in the episode with the ab crunches and being able to do 1,000. In a previous episode, I referred to a guy who was at Buzz when I was there, who was nicknamed for a short period Bilbo Baggins. This guy used to do the Patrick Bateman quote from American Psycho that opens the movie about how he can do 1,000 ab crunches, which I mentioned earlier. Footnote number two, I think Ronald Coase's article, Nature of the Firm, is relevant to those transaction costs. And I added in communication costs, which might be one of the same. If Ronald Coase were here and my BFF, he might correct me. There's a link to the Wikipedia description of The Nature of the Firm, which is one of the most highly cited articles in economics, in the show notes. Footnote number three, I think trust in a business is twofold. One is protection of downside risk, the cover your ass mentality, if you will, CYA. But there's a positive side of trust too. The institution you're in will benefit, or the hiring benefit will benefit in some way when they trust someone to do good things. But often the person who is great at building that trust is not the most creative or the smartest person or the best leader, which explains a lot in modern tech companies. Footnote number four, a couple decision-making resources I've linked in the show notes. One is a book I refer to very often by the brothers Chip and Dan Heath called Decisive. Another book relevant to how much a role intuition plays in our decision-making is the book Persuasion by Robert Cialdini. He also wrote the book Influence, and a number of marketers and decision-makers refer to his book on a regular basis. I found the book extremely engaging and useful. I've listened to it a couple times on Audible already. Despite what people claim, decisions are made an inordinate amount of time based on intuition. That's not always bad. I think there's an incredible data fetish in our modern economy to the detriment of speed and getting it 80% right. Both of these books paint a picture of the human decision-making animal that is far from perfect. Finally, Local H is still around if you want to check them out. I actually do. I have a renewed interest in Local H. Apparently, they play concerts every now and then where they'll interview attendees and then pass around a hat containing the albums the attendees mentioned in said interviews. Some lucky fan will pick from the hat a slip of paper, and whatever album that is, they will play in its entirety without stopping. I think it's called the Six Angry Albums Tour. Copacetic is defined in the dictionary as very satisfactory. And by the dictionary, in this case, I mean Merriam-Webster online. There are a range of alternative definitions. I think some people claim excellent, but that's pretty rare. The just fine category of definitions seems to be where most people agree copacetic is. Very satisfactory is kind of like getting a shirt in extra medium. Don't be copacetic. Be excellent. Have your people be amazing. That local knowledge is waiting for you. Go get it. The Warrior Poet is a property of Rainiac Productions. The helicopter fills you heard come courtesy of Mike Koenig. Warrior Poet is produced by Laddie, with special contributions by Spoonman and me, Shree.
No, Kevin. Mina do it. Spita.